But we're glad that everybody's here today, and we're going to be continuing the series that I had started a few weeks ago on child training. And before we do that, let's just again have a reminder, we've got the Bible Forum coming up very, very soon. So now is the time to be inviting people. Now is the time to be clearing our schedules, making sure that we will be here. It's not terribly effective to invite someone to come, and if they come and then we're not here. So let's be here ourselves. It's a big effort. Our speaker is going to do his job very well, I'm confident. We'll be glad that we were here. And it's a very good opportunity to invite people from the community. So let's be working on that as we approach it. We've been talking about mistakes that we make in parenting. And if you're a parent, you're going to make some mistakes. I've made more than my share. And we want to avoid those mistakes and try to stop doing them and not repeating them. And if you recall, we talked about number one, failing to discipline. That's a big mistake a lot of people make. And number of Proverbs telling us to do the opposite, rewarding misbehavior. And when children misbehave and then they get what they want is the last thing that should ever happen. When a child is misbehaving, the thing that he's misbehaving about is the thing he should not get. Discipline needs to be corrective, not enforcing of misbehavior. We talked about expecting misbehavior. When we get into that cycle of just, well, that's the way she's going to act. That's the way he's going to act. And at that point, we've kind of relinquished our job as mom and dad. We've given up and we've decided that the 3-year-old or the 6-year-old or the 10-year-old or the 15-year-old has won, and that's what they're going to do. Little children are going to do some foolish things. It's our job to train them to do the right thing, not giving up. Failing to be consistent. That's sometimes we're consistent, and then sometimes we're not. And then sometimes we're consistent, and sometimes we're not. And then that'll lead to a lot of problems. We gave the illustration of the parking tickets, and I changed my colors. I found out I had the colors all wrong. That system doesn't work very well, of course. And then we talked about, now we're ready for point number 5. Parenting mistake number 5, thinking I don't have time. I've been told this before, and we all maybe have felt this way. And a mom says, I just don't have time to correct their misbehavior. If I correct every time they disobey, I'll tell you what that's like. That's like finding out your child has lice and saying, I don't have time to deal with that. Nobody likes finding out that your kid has lice in their hair. That's not a pleasant thing to find out about, especially if they say, yeah, I felt it for a while and didn't say anything. That's really not a fun thing. It's not good news. You don't want to deal with it, but you need to deal with it. Because not dealing with it makes it get worse. By the way, side tip, olive oil and a shower cap. When we went through with this, we tried a bunch of that toxic poison stuff and it wasn't working. Olive oil suffocates them. And so you just put olive oil, even if they have thick hair, put on a shower cap, they go to sleep, all the little lice go. Then if there are any eggs, you do it a couple more times. Works a whole lot better and a lot less toxic. But that's not what our lesson's about. Our lesson's about, just thrown out there because I was feeling bad how much poison we were putting on that child's head and it wasn't doing any good. Child training time is well-invested time and it saves time. When today it's, but I've got to get him to soccer practice so I don't have time to deal with his disobedience. He doesn't deserve to get to go to soccer practice if he's disobeying and doesn't take correction. Now, if you can correct the problem, he apologizes, and you can still make soccer practice, fine. But if he's not going to obey, then why should he be enjoying privileges when he's not doing his responsibility of taking the correction? Deal with what needs to be done. And when you deal with it, that makes the rest of the day easier, and it can make tomorrow easier, and next month easier, and the next 10 years easier. All of us either have to battle with or have battled with habits, ruts of reaction or action that we can get into. Whether with a child it's being a bad sport, or not being honest, or being selfish, or having talking back or whatever. You let that stay there. That pops up its little head, and you let that stay there. It's going to get worse, and it can get more and more entrenched. And the deeper those roots go into our character and our habit, the harder it is to eradicate. A weed that has little shallow roots is pretty easy to pull out. When they get a big root system, it's a pain to get it out of there. Deal with it then. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11 says, all discipline for the moment seems not joyful, but sorrowful. When your child misbehaves, no parent goes, it's sorrowful. And when the child has to be punished, the child's not, oh, goody. It is sorrowful for the moment. It's not joyful, but sorrowful. Yet afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit. If you had parents that disciplined you out of love and concern for you, some people grew up in a home where there wasn't discipline. Some people grew up in a home where there was abuse. Not talking about either of those things. I'm talking about if you grew up in a home where your parents expected you to behave and you were disciplined or punished for your good if you didn't. Think how much that has benefited you for all of these years. One of the, if you go down to a prison, a woman that works security in a prison down in Georgia told me, she said, I looked at the records of the inmates, and when it listed mother's name, everybody knew who it was. She said, father's name, most of them were blank. They didn't know who the father was. There was no father involved. And that, among other things, led to a lot of a lack of parenting, either due to the fact that the character of the woman who didn't bother to, you know, make a commitment in marriage to a father, or the fact that maybe some things beyond her control. She's too busy doing other things because there's no man involved. But whatever the case, there ends up being a lot of parenting that doesn't get done. And those people can end up a huge, huge mess and just an utter lack of character. And those same babies, if they had had a mother and a father that were focused on God and focused on helping them, instead of ending up in prison, they could have ended up doing wonderful things in life. Could have been happy, productive, good, ethical, strong people. Our children deserve discipline and love and care. Now, sometimes, you know, you're going to get what you deserve. Yeah, that kind of deserve. But I mean deserve in the sense they do deserve. I needed discipline when I was little. You needed discipline when you were little. And these little babies need, as they grow, they're going to need correction and love and discipline and training. And to not give it to them is robbing them. He who spares his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Proverbs 13:24. Mistake number six. Training them to disrespect instructions given calmly. This is easy to do. When a mother says to her child, I need you to stop doing that, what should the child do? They should stop. When a father says, I need you to come do this, what should the child do? The child should do it. They should do it, whether it's in a calm voice or an elevated voice or a loud voice or a yelling voice or a screaming voice. They should do it. But it shouldn't need to get to that point if the child learns to obey a calm voice. This is not a good situation up here. This is where it should be. But a lot of children don't listen to this because they've been trained, not intentionally, but unintentionally. But the way we do things is understood by the children. They get trained to not listen till it's this. So I'll give you kind of a quick scenario. It's like this. Here's Junior, and some of you have heard this before, but pardon it for those that haven't. Here's Junior, and he's got a big test tomorrow, and he needs to go to bed. And Mom tells him, Junior, you need to go to bed. Junior is not interested in going to bed. Junior is playing some video game, and he just kind of goes, uh-huh. And he keeps playing. A few minutes later, Mom says, Junior, I told you you need to go to bed. Okay. Junior, I mean it. You need to go to bed. All right, just a minute. Junior, are you still there? This is the next level. I'm almost there. And this goes on for a bit, and she's getting a little bit more irritated. Then she gets tied up, and something's drawn her attention away, and she's had to deal with something else, fixing dinner for tomorrow or phone call, whatever. She comes back in. It's an hour later, and there's Junior. At this point, Mom doesn't say, Junior, it's time to go to bed. And if she did, it wouldn't do any good. She's ballistic now. She'd gotten irritated, annoyed, and now she comes in, he's still up! And her eyes get, Junior, you better get up right now! And what does Junior do? Down goes the thing, and Junior goes, okay. And he goes to bed. And Mom's thinking what? She's got a question. What's your question? Why won't he obey? Ben, we know the answer, don't we? Why isn't Junior obeying? Because she's trained him to not listen until she loses it. Why did he put the remote down there? Because she went code red and he realized now she means it. You know, before I could... She's not yelled yet. I can ignore it. She's not mad yet. I can ignore it. Wham! Oh, I better go now. She's frustrated. She's annoyed. But it's a problem that she's created. What I would suggest is she should apologize for handling it that way and tell them there's going to be a new policy. She might say something like this. Do you like it when I scream at you? And he says, no. She says, well, I'm going to stop screaming. Okay? And if I do, then I'll apologize. But my goal, I'm not going to scream at you anymore. And Junior goes, cool. And he says, because I'm not going to need to, because you're going to obey when I say it calmly. Raise your hand if you think Junior processes this, gets this, and believes it. There's one hand. No, he's not. Eventually he will, but he's not. She can say it, but Junior is used to a pattern that has developed over months and years. And what's going to happen is she's going to tell him, and Bertina told me years ago, it's helpful if they're in the middle of something to give them a warning ahead of time instead of just drop it right now. So she can give a warning. That's good advice. And so it says, Junior, it's almost bedtime. You got about 5 more minutes. Then I'm going to tell you to go to bed. And it would be a whole lot better if Junior would say, yes, ma'am. But he's probably not up to that stage yet. So he's like, uh-huh. And then 5 minutes later, she says, okay, Junior, now it's time to go to bed now. Okay, just a minute. What? So, come here. What? Well, now you're going to get a spanking.
What did I do?
Well, you didn't obey. And of course, what does Junior want to say?
But you're not mad yet. You're not screaming yet. You know, I thought I had...
But then maybe he remembers, oh yeah, that new policy thing. And she says, now listen, see, I'm not going to yell, I'm not going to scream, I am going to punish you. And then tomorrow, I want you to remember, and when I say it, I want you to do it. And then she punishes him. And then he goes to bed. Now tomorrow, guess what's probably going to happen? It's probably going to happen again. But if it keeps happening again and again, sooner or later, Junior's going to get with the program and he's going to realize what? He's going, okay, Junior, it's time to get up now. And he says, yes, ma'am, and he gets up. So it's really our choice. They never obey. You can arrange that pretty easy. Just don't do your job and don't discipline, and you can get that quite easily. They obey after you scream. They obey only after you say it over and over and over. Or they obey when you tell them to do it, even when you're speaking calmly, without any yelling, without any nagging, badgering, etc. Failing to use the rod and reproof. Proverbs says the rod and reproof bring wisdom. Some parents use one, some parents use the other, and both are important. If it's just the rod, what does the child learn? You know, if the child walks by and dad just reaches out and says, pow, you know, whacks him on the backside, what does the child learn? The child's learned not to go too close to dad. You know, or if whatever you're doing and dad saw you doing it in a different room. It doesn't mean that he's learned a lesson or he's being trained. On the other hand, if there's just reproof, if you give reproof to the child, but there's no consequence, what do they learn? And my favorite example of this is the time Bertina was at Walmart and saw this little kid just in total malice towards his mom. He's trying to kick her. He's yelling at her. He hates her. And the mother is very calm. She gets big points on being calm. She leans over the buggy and she says to him, it doesn't make mommy feel good when you do that. Well, pro tip, when he's trying to kick you and says he hates you, he's really not trying to make you feel good. That's not his agenda. He's wanting to make you feel bad. He didn't get the toy that he wanted, or he didn't get to run around like he wanted to, and he's going to punish you and bring you in submission. And you know what? That's exactly the way it works in a lot of families. The parent is brought into his discipline, brought into submission. And he's not trying to make you feel good. But I suppose she had gone to some parenting class or read some parenting magazine or something and said, tell the child how you feel. So she's telling the child, that doesn't make mommy feel good. And he leaned up into her face and just yelled loudly at her to just shut up, just right in her face. Mom, what? He's kicking you, he's telling you, and you're talking about your feelings to him. He doesn't care anything about your feelings. Hopefully later he will, but we need to start right now about his feelings. And he's got some feelings that need to be hurt. And learn that that isn't how it works. He shouldn't be controlling you. You need to get control of him. So, there needs to be rod and reproof. And there's a lot of value in the lecture. For one thing, if you were raised in a house where, generally speaking, if there were, I mean, there might be something where you've talked about it before and they know what it is, and so there's the punishment. But if something comes up, there needs to be a lecture before you got the spanking or whatever, if you were older, whatever other penalty there was, like go out and pull weeds or run around the house or stand in the corner, whatever it is that you might have to do or cough up. At older ages, coughing up money works well and can also be an additional source of income for family. But when you were going to be punished, you got the lecture, right? How did you feel about the lecture? Did you ever feel like, I wish Mom would stop talking to me about what I did and just go ahead and give me the punishment and get it over with? Did you ever feel like that? Yeah, that's how. Which shows that it's effective. Because what's happening during the lecture? It's getting to my conscience. It's calling my attention to my behavior and how badly I treated my brother. And it's making me think about how I would feel if somebody treated me like that. And it's making me see that instead of from my own little point of view where I'm justifying my behavior, I'm really wrong, and that hurts inside here. I'd like to just go ahead and let's get the pain here and get it over with, but this is touching here, and that's helping me learn. And then there needs to be the punishment. There's also something to be said for the anticipation effect. And this is like when you go to the doctor and you're going to get a shot, he just says, well, you need a shot. That's not too bad. But if he goes, you're going to need a shot. And then he talks to you about it. It's going to hurt. You might want to hold on to something. The same shot is going to hurt worse because it's not just over and done. You're thinking about it. The lecture touches the child's heart. It helps them realize this is serious. And then when they're punished, they're thinking about it. It's an effective thing. The Bible says the rod and reproof bring wisdom. A child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. And that's right. The child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. The two-year-old, the three-year-old, the four-year-old, the five-year-old, the 10-year-old, the 11-year-old, the 12, they don't know enough to know what's best for them. That's why God entrusted them to you. They don't need to be the one that's in charge. The child that gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Let me say this also about the amount of force in a spanking. It can be very minor at first. With a very small child, this can be all it needs to be. With a later child, it's going to need to be more, and you can step it up accordingly. I remember one of my nieces one time was told, you need to pick up those toys. Father left. Later, after a good while, the father comes back and the toys still aren't picked up, doing it like very slowly. You know. And so I said, all right, you get two choices. You either do it right now or you get a spanking. And she goes, I'll take a spanking. Which made him realize at that point the spankings needed to be increased. Don't start here with spankings. Don't start with a small child that's like, you know, bam it. Just a little will do the point with a small child. It doesn't need to be a lot. As they get a little bigger and they get a little tougher and a little bit more, you may need to step it up some so that they feel the punishment. But don't get ahead of the curve on that. You don't want to abuse the child. You want to discipline the child. You want to train the child. Number eight, failing to control self. Our discipline is not very effective when we're not in control ourselves. For one thing, the child can see that we're not in control. And so then they don't respect the control we're trying to put them in when they can see you're not in control. So it makes it very ineffective to a large degree when we're doing that. The proper motivation needs to be, not that we're mad or not that we're angry, but the proper motivation needs to be that it's out of love. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. There's a huge difference between discipline and abuse. And I think well, let me tell you this story. It was about a child, some kind of child expert, being interviewed by a couple of people before a studio audience. And he's giving the line that you should never, ever, you know, spank a child physically or anyway. And the woman on the co-host, she goes, well, now I have a two-year-old, And if he's going to touch something, you know, dangerous or sharp, I'll say, like, no, no. And the expert smiled and he goes, and it's important to know that that's wrong. And a lady in the back said, I have a problem. I'm always, you know, yelling and screaming at my kids. And he just dismissed that completely. He goes, oh, he says, don't worry about that. I have a 3-year-old and four-year-old. I yelled at him all the time. And then I put two and two together. You got a small child that you think you can't go no, no to. What are you going to do? You know, ooh, a knife. Oh, daddy would like it if you don't pick it up. Oh, daddy would really like it if you would put the knife back down. Daddy takes after the sister. No! You're going to resort to yelling and screaming if there's no discipline being done. And that can get to be just abusive. Don't say things like this. What's wrong with you? I don't know why you won't do right. Now, that may be the way you feel at some point, and you may want to vent, but you're sending a very powerfully negative message when you say that. You're telling the child there's something wrong with you, and the adults don't know what it is. Which also gives them license to what? I'm the one that there's something wrong with, so even mom and dad don't know what it is, so I shouldn't have to worry about what it is, and then keep doing it. Don't do that. There's a test I like to recommend on this. It's called the vase test, and it kind of goes like this. There's a really, really nice vase. It's worth a lot of money. It's passed down from your family. You cannot replace it, and it stays on the mantle in your house. And if the house was on fire, that would be one of the first things you would grab as you're headed out. You look back, and for the sake of this illustration, you haven't told Junior that you can't play ball in the house. But he has come in, and he's playing ball in the house. And he's throwing the ball off the wall, and he's catching it. And Mom looks at him, and she says, Junior, don't throw the ball in the house. He looks at you, and he throws the ball. What do you do? I'll tell you what a lot of parents would do. Junior, I said don't throw the ball in the house. Junior, I mean it. Don't throw the ball in the house. Junior, stop. Stop throwing the ball. I'm going to count to 10. I'm going to tell your father when he gets home. Junior, you better. And of course, he's not going to do anything until she, you know, starts getting, it takes away herself, which is not training him. Or gets mad or something like that. Now, change the scenario and it went like this. You see him throwing the ball. You don't want anything to get broken. You say, Junior, don't throw the ball in the house. He looks at it. In other words, you know he heard you. It's not a question of that. If you don't know he heard you, don't hold him responsible. You know he heard you. And then he goes, except it hit that corner and it bounced over here and it hit the mantle. And off goes that vase, and it's shattered into pieces. Now does Mom go, Junior, I asked you not to throw that ball. Oh, no. No, that's not what Mom does now. Now Mom is angry, and now Mom loses it. Now she is, and he is really in trouble. Why? Well, because Mom has her priorities misplaced. There are two things in that room, and one is so little value compared to the other one. There's the soul and heart of a little boy that's going to grow up and be a man that needs to be trained. And he needs to be in submission to his parents, and he needs to be in submission to God. And there's a vase. And this is what's more valuable. And when this was at risk, she wasn't all that concerned. When this was broken, she wasn't concerned. When this got broken, she lost it. I would suggest this is what ought to be instead of saying, no big deal, Junior, I asked you not to do that, would she do that with the vase? The vase shatters. She goes, Junior, I asked you not to do that. I don't think that's the proper reaction either time. But instead of, he's in big trouble because he broke the vase, you know what? He should be in big trouble because he disobeyed her. He looked at her. He knew what she said not to do, and he purposely did it again. Seeing her son's willful and defiant disobedience, mom takes this very serious, and he is punished. Why? Not because there was a vase that was broken, but because there was character that was broken. And it can be fixed. But time is ticking. And if this continues, it's going to get worse and have repercussions, and it needs to be dealt with. Last 2 points real quickly here. Fathers discouraging and provoking your children to wrath. Colossians 3:21 says, fathers, provoke not your children that they be not discouraged. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. Some people grow up in a home where there's criticism or nothing. And that's why some children misbehave. I had a mom tell me one time that her son would misbehave at school so that he would get attention from those that would discipline him. And you might have grown up in a home like that. If you did what you were supposed to do, nothing. No good job. No, I love you. No, and don't say I love you just when they do a good job. But there's some people who grow up in home and they never hear I love you. Some people grow up in home, they don't even get a hug. No, I'm proud of you. Way to go. It's just nothing. Unless they misbehave, then they're in trouble. That's very difficult. Don't expect talents beyond their capacity. One of the things that is impressive about parents with special needs children is that they will often, they do such a great job in dealing with it because they love that child, but they still expect what the child is capable of doing. To expect a child to not do what they're capable of doing is a disservice to the child. But don't expect your child to do, if your child doesn't have a particular talent that's kind of natural inborn, don't demand that they have to have that. You know, if you were going to be an opera singer and it didn't happen, and so you have a little girl, she's going to be an opera singer. Well, if she turns out to be tone deaf, you're going to have to just kind of ditch your little dream. Besides, don't make your dream for you her dream for her. And more often, I think that happens on the baseball field and stuff, if you've ever seen that parent that's out there like that. And don't let the boundaries be fluctuating based on your mood. When you're in a good mood, you tolerate sassing off to mom. When you're in a bad mood, if they drop something, they're in trouble. And the last point for this morning, failing to parent with joy. Have you ever been in a house where things are well run and people obey the rules, but it looks like everybody's been chewing persimmons or something because there's just nothing's pleasant, nothing's funny, nothing's, you know, it's just, there's no joy there. Proverbs 5:18, rejoice in the wife of your youth. Proverbs 23, the father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. He will have joy of him. Let your father and mother be glad. Let her rejoice who gave birth to you. Proverbs 13, a joyful heart makes a cheerful face. When the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. A cheerful heart has a continual feast. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. The law of kindness is on her tongue, Proverbs 31. And a joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones, Proverbs 17:22. Stop and think of some of your favorite memories from your childhood. What were some of your favorite memories from your childhood? Chances are, some of you are thinking about things that your parents wouldn't have guessed that that's what you would be thinking about. some little trip that you went together, some little some little game you used to do, some little thing your mom would do for you, you know, when it's time for you to go to bed, some little pleasant family interaction or something that just gave you warmth and security and just fun, joyful things in the home. Our children need those too. And so while we need to work on ourselves and work on our children, we need to let the house be a thing of joy. In Galatians chapter 5, it said what? Among the fruits of the Spirit. Love and peace and joy. We need to aim for those in our homes. Let's work on these things together. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come as you stand and sing?